This is a commercial-free archive edition of our live radio show that airs every Friday at noon Arizona time on openminds.tv.
Welcome to Open Minds Radio with your host, Alejandro Rojas, former Director of Public Education and official spokesperson for the Mutual UFO Network. Alejandro has been a UFO paranormal researcher and journalist for nearly a decade and has logged hours in the field investigating the paranormal up close and personal. And now, Open Minds Radio presents evidence and the latest news regarding the UFO phenomenon. Here's your host, Alejandro Rojas.
Hello, and welcome to Open Minds Radio. This is Alejandro Rojas, and we have another exciting show today. Our guest is going to be Chuck Zukowski. He is a paranormal investigator, and we're going to be talking about cattle mutilations. There were several that happened in Colorado, and you may be thinking, cattle get killed all the time. What's the big deal? But these are mysterious cattle mutilations where even the local authorities actually went to Chuck, this paranormal investigator, to help them figure out what the heck is going on because they don't know who or what is mutilating these cattle. They've been found in these very strange situations, and we'll talk more about that when Chuck comes on the line. He's an electronics engineer and a reserve deputy sheriff in El Paso County, Colorado. That's in Colorado Springs, home of the Air Force Academy and Air Force Space Command. There is an Air Force Space Command. Read more about it on Google. He's an accomplished UFO and paranormal investigator, and he's going to be talking to us about his work with the authorities on these mutilations. He was even able to get the Colorado State University to help him out with this mystery, and they're one of the top vet schools in the country, so that's really exciting. All of this has happened in or around the mysterious San Luis Valley in Colorado, so if you're not aware of that, there's been strange things happening in this valley for years. I should just share my San Luis story, actually. My family's from that valley. My great-grandma grew up there, and when she was a little girl, she remembers being under the dinner table when there was a pounding that came to the door. They opened the door, and this guy panicked, said that he had been chased by a 6-foot praying mantis all night. And so her father and uncle actually grabbed their guns and went out looking for this thing, which they never found. But that's just one of the many strange stories that happens in the San Luis Valley. Maybe we'll ask Chuck if he's got some more. If you want to read more about Chuck, he's a guy in this field who takes things seriously but also has a sense of humor, as you're going to find. His website's ufonut.com. If you want to look more into this UFO nut that we're going to have on today. However, before we talk to our guest, as usual, we're going to update you on UFOs in the news. These are headlines from conventional media around the world. We keep an eye on what's going on out there. And we post these stories on our website at openminds.tv. But today we have our news correspondent, Jason McClellan. Jason, what's the news out there?
Thanks, Alejandro. In the news this week, if you've ever wanted to send a message into space, here's your chance. SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, is marking its 50th anniversary by using a radio telescope to send 5,000 messages into space. Messages can be submitted to SETI, and the 50 best messages will be published in the Daily Telegraph in March. And those winners will also receive copies of ASU professor Paul Davies' new book, The Eerie Silence. So what message would you send into space?
Yo. Just yo.
Just yo?
Yeah, kind of just a greeting, you know. Hey, yo.
I'd have to give it some thought.
You know what I think is funny about this, though, is that SETI, even though they're called Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, you'd think they'd be our buddies. They're not, because they're real skeptical. They're using radio signals, and they have a concern these days because we're not using that technology anymore. I don't know why they assume that some advanced civilizations out there would use it, but really, you could go on your two-way radio and send a message on your two-way radio, and those radio waves, I believe, are going to go out into space. So I don't know why we need them to do it, but yeah, that's what I'd say. Yo!
Hopefully, they're already listening to our radio show.
Yeah, they could be. Our radio show is probably going out into space.
Also in the news, Richard Heen, father of the Balloon Boy, was released from jail on Sunday after serving 28 days for his role in the hoax that sent rescue teams chasing after the infamous helium-powered balloon. Heen was released 2 days early from his 30-day sentence and is now serving 60 days through the work release program. Heen and his wife both pled guilty in November to falsely reporting that their 6-year-old son had floated away in a UFO-shaped balloon.
Yeah, all in a stunt to try to get out their own UFO program, which is really sad, and it may have worked, we'll see. But, I mean, he spent some time in prison for it, so.
Right. In other news, according to Michael Mottner, a research professor of chemistry at Virginia Commonwealth University, we have a moral obligation to seed the universe with life, preparing other worlds to develop and sustain complex life, therefore giving human existence a cosmic purpose. Mottner claims current technology can accomplish the task of launching directed panspermia missions. Wow. That sounds like a term that would be used in some futuristic sci-fi movie where an old man is having a conversation with a younger man, telling him that, oh, well, you know, a man your age should be out launching directed panspermia, sowing wild oats.
Yeah, in space. Sow your wild oats in space. Yeah, it reminds me of James Kirk, you know, Star Trek. That's what he was trying to do, is
absolutely
seed the universe.
That's right.
And he was having fun doing it, it seems like. So that's great.
You can read more about Professor Mottner's ideas in the upcoming issue of Journal of Cosmology. That's all for me. I'm your Open Minds News correspondent, Jason McClellan, and I'll kick it back to you, Alejandro.
All right. Thanks, Jason. We also have our own featured news that we have on our website. And this week we have a story on the Irish. We talked a little bit about it last week, actually. The Irish being given credit for a UFO video that was actually taken in California. And there was some confusion there because The Sun, a popular paper in the UK, had said that there's this new exciting video that was just found and it was filmed over Ireland. And the video they showed is a very interesting video. I think it's definitely something to look at. They had Nick Pope, who it worked for the Ministry of Defense in the UK, investigating UFOs, talk about it. He found it to be pretty incredible. But it wasn't new and it wasn't shot in Ireland. In fact, it was posted on YouTube about a year ago, and the guy claimed to have taken it in Fremont, California, using night vision technology. So it's kind of gray, where you see this triangular configuration flying above the city, and it kind of makes like this U sort of motion and flying very quickly. So it's very strange what that might be. So who knows? It could be some black project, some secret advanced technology, or of course it could be from elsewhere. Yet to be seen. So we'll keep you up to date on that, but you can read more about that story and watch that video at openminds.tv. We also have kind of a cool one out there on the Brilliant Buzzard, and these are some black projects. We got a guy, Michael Schratt, on our team now who is an aerospace historian, and he's been looking into what some of the top secret craft that we have might be flying around. And he uses some witness testimony from engineers or people who say they were in the military gassing one of these things up or something. So some amazing stuff. And if you think about even the brand new craft out there, like the F-22 Raptor, which is brand new, you know, but that was developed like 20 years ago or something. So who knows what they may have out there. It's amazing what there might have out there. So I'm really excited. After the break here, which we're going to take in just a few seconds, we're going to have Chuck to talk about cattle mutilation. Some of you have probably heard about mutilations. Some of you haven't. But I'm really proud of my good buddy Chuck here, who went and actually worked with authorities. He's got a great personality, and he's a deputy sheriff, so people like to work with him. And also doing a great job by getting CSU involved, because it's rare that people get universities to get into the paranormal. So we'll be talking to Chuck right after the break.
You're listening to Open Minds Radio with Alejandro Rojas on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
All right, we're back, and I want to remind you that some of these cool feature stories we've been talking about at openminds.tv are also made into little news featurette videos by our excellent video producer, Tom Ruffin, and his crew. So you got to check those out. You'll see them right on the front page, so they're hard to miss. But now, ladies and gentlemen, I believe we have the one and only Chuck Zukowski on the line. Chuck, are you there?
Yay, I'm here.
You're really excited to hear from yourself, huh?
Hey, I tell you what, my fellow Arizonaites, I was born in Stafford.
Oh, that's right. I forgot you were born out here.
That's right.
But now you're living in beautiful Colorado.
Wow, beautiful cold Colorado. We had snow yesterday, and I think it's about 40 degrees now today.
Well, to start off, getting off of the bad news of the cold weather out there, because, you know, we've got like 70-plus weather out here, and it's beautiful. I'm happy about my move. But let's start off with what got you interested in investigating the paranormal?
Oh, my gosh. I think I've been interested in it ever since I can remember. You know, someone else had asked me that last year, and I think as a kid I might have saw something that kind of, you know, sparked my interest, and I decided to stick with it. I do remember when I moved from California out to Colorado and I started going through some of my old stuff, I did find some old books that I had bought when I was in elementary that was based on UFOs. So I've always had a fascination with it. And of course, six kids in my family, only two of us are really UFO investigators and decided to go into that field, and that's me and my sister Debbie. And we really didn't even know each other or going into that field until we did a family reunion.
Yeah, that's so cool.
We started talking about it.
And it's not just an interest, but Debbie Ziegelmeier, your sister, is a great researcher also. I mean, you guys are out there. I mean, you're big-time researchers who are out there doing conferences and talking to people, and it's just not a passion. It's something that you guys do on a probably almost spend as much time as you do on your regular jobs.
Unfortunately, I'd love to spend as much time on my regular job, but but something has to be able to fund my hobby, and my regular job does that. But it's been a pretty exciting year so far. In January, I've done two Bigfoot investigations with our good friend Joe Feck out there in the northwestern part of Colorado, up in the Pike Peak, or actually Colorado National Forest. And then last Saturday, I jumped in on a ghost investigation at the famous Stanley Hotel.
Cool.
At this park. Yeah.
Was that your first time going to the Stanley?
No, I've been to the Stanley a few times doing their ghost tours.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe had given me a 3D Nashika camera, which is kind of cool looking, it's got four lenses on it. And so I would experiment. So I swung by there last Saturday to do their 5 o'clock ghost investigation, or ghost tour, excuse me. And they were offering a investigation from 8 p.m. to 1 in the morning. And they had a slot open. So I jumped in and I happened to have my kit in my car with my night vision and trifold meter and digital recorder and a 3D camera. That's on the website. Matter of fact, last night and tonight, I'm still pulling some video clips off of my Hi8. I did pick up a couple of orbs, and I did pick up some pretty interesting responses to my trifield meter when I was talking to a particular individual.
Yeah, getting into that. Well, I guess one thing about the Stanley Hotel that people should know is that the movie The Shining was based on the Stanley Hotel. So it is a very famous haunted hotel where lots of people get some weird stuff. But now knowing you, and you're mentioning some of your equipment, your EMF reader and all of that, and knowing that you're into the various paranormal fields, such as ghosts and UFOs, just real quick before we move on, even with the cattle mutilations, do you find some sort of similarity between these different paranormal areas?
That's a very, very good question, Alejandro, and I'm not just saying that because you're my good buddy. But, yeah, you know, cattle mutilations, we've had UFO sightings around cattle mutilation areas, also where there's been strange military presence around cattle mutilation sightings. Alien abductions sometimes rolls into the supernatural. I did have couple of years ago, I had a lady contact me that she thought that she was being abducted. And when I went and checked it out, it was more of a supernatural thing. So at the time, I didn't have the equipment to do a a ghost investigation. And then vice versa. You know, you would have someone that's possibly thinking that their house is haunted in this typical abduction scenario. So I think we're seeing some crossover there. And as an investigator, you really have to get familiarized with all the different aspects.
So you're going out and saying, I'm sorry, ma'am, you're not being abducted. Those are only ghosts. Or, no, you don't have ghosts in your house. You're actually being abducted.
Yeah, really. It's, you know, not too often will a ghost actually put an implant in you.
Yeah.
You know, unless it's something new, I'm not quite sure. You know, we have to stay on top of that. And versa vice, you know, where people seem to think, and we find out that, you know, it's really some paranormal activity. And I'm pretty excited. You know, I've been trying to pick up some of my my equipment and change it over. And I've got a couple of Sony CCD night vision security cameras. Actually, they're due to arrive today via UPS, and then I got DVR and all kinds of neat stuff. Because slowly you have to start picking up, you know, your tools and getting them up to date.
Yeah, that's one thing why guys love this sort of stuff, because you get to have lots of toys that you play with and get out there with little things that beep and lights moving.
So, the last two Bigfoot investigations, the first one I had three night vision cameras set up and a wildlife camera set up, and then the one that was two Saturdays ago.
Well, and I know that I talked to you about that. I know you guys didn't get a whole lot. You caught a secret or some kind of super squirrel who was able to do some incredible stuff on your videos. But where you were more fruitful in one of your investigations was a cattle mutilation. So I want to talk about that. I know we're going to have actually an article in our magazine that is coming out in a couple months, not in the first issue, but in the second issue, where we'll have some of the pictures. Unfortunately, it's hard to get pictures that aren't very unpleasant when it comes to mutilations. But to start off with these cattle mutilations, what has indicated to you in these cases, or historically in cases of cattle mutilations, why it doesn't lead to predators or humans that seem to be doing this?
Well, first off, you know, we had one of the first cases was Lady the Horse, not Snippy, out here in the San Luis Valley back in 67. And since 1967, at least out here in the United States, we've had multiple cattle mutilations occurring almost every year. And since then, no one's been caught, convicted, tried, you know, the whole bit. So, you know, the human aspect is would be, these guys would be absolutely phenomenal, because they're able to, you know, pick up anywhere from a, you know, 900 to a, you know, 1,300 pound animal, do their business with the animal, you know, extracting blood and doing the surgical cuts and removal of organs, and then putting the animal back with no trace evidence at all. Mm-hmm. So that's
so you're saying essentially, these animals are taken, organs are seem to be surgically removed. And what organs typically are removed?
Well, you know, Beth, with my five, you know, particular cases, we really, except for the calves, where everything was removed. With the two calves that I did last year, the Miller case and the Sanchez case, the whole center section of the animal was completely gone. All the organs were gone, everything. Mm-hmm. And they even, you know, basically cleared out the inside of the rib cage, so your lungs, your heart, you know, everything was missing. Generally, you see pieces of the animal missing. You'll see the sexual organs will be removed, or the anal area will be removed, or maybe an eye. A lot of times the tongue is gone. So it seems like, at first, we were seeing anything that goes in and goes out of the animal. That particular area was affected by, you know, by the mutilation. But last year, it became very destructive, to the point where, you know, the whole center section of these small calves were just completely just obliterated, just removed. Mm-hmm. And for such destruction, and not to see any signs of blood splattering, pieces of meat, pulling, you know, pieces of the carcass from, you know, scavengers, all that's void. And matter of fact, what is interesting, and I did learn from the five, well, now, you know, some people say or some other investigators say that when an animal gets mutilated, that other scavengers and predators, scavengers won't touch it. That's not true. I have plenty of evidence that scavengers have touched, mutilation cases that I personally see. But what's interesting about that is they don't go and scavenge the unusual cutting part. Mm-hmm. Wherever the animal had, had the unusual cut, surgical-looking cut, they won't touch that. They'll go somewhere else. And what's really, really unusual about that is you'll see it's basically an open wound right through some fresh meat. It doesn't make sense. They don't have to pull through the hide to go right into some nice, soft meat. It's all right there. No, they'd rather go somewhere else on the animal, to eat. And that part I found very, very interesting in all five cases.
Yeah, well, we'll get into more details about all of these five cases after our break that's coming up here. And we'll get into more detail about these animals where everything was removed, and it didn't seem to be predator kill because, like you said, there wasn't blood in the area or pieces and parts of these organs around where the animal was found, which is typical for a predator kill, and which is why the authorities were so baffled. And we'll get more into that and go over these five cases that you investigated as soon as we get back from our break. So stay tuned, people. You're listening to Open Minds Radio on KFNX 1100.
This is Open Minds Radio. Here again, your host, UFO paranormal researcher and journalist, Alejandro Rojas.
All right, we are back. I want to remind you we're going to open up the phone lines here in a minute, but feel free to call in right now and stay in the queue. Get your question ready. You can call us at 602-277-5369, or if you're outside of the area and you're watching us at openminds.tv on the live stream, you can call 1-866-536-1100. For more information about Chuck, you can read a story. We've got a story of him up on openminds.tv. But you can also go to his awesome website, ufonut.com, and your website just keeps getting better, Chuck. It's looking really good.
Hey, thank you very much. I'm sure Matt Morgan, the person who is responsible for my website, well, I appreciate that. I'm just emailing him right now, Matt.
Cool. I mean, you've got your own videos up there, too.
Well, we have to be able to compete with the big guys, you guys.
Yep, that's us, the big guys.
The big guys. And I don't mean that in a, modular way.
Are you making fun of my weight?
No, I'm not making fun of your weight, not as far as you know.
But let's get into some of these cattle mutilations you investigated. First was the Mike Duran case. And what was that? That was March. That was about a year ago, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We're looking at about, the last time the animal was seen was on Sunday, March 8th.
Mm-hmm.
And then we rolled down there we're looking at the week after that, March 8th.
Yeah, we were out there 10th or 11th or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's where it was. It was the 10th.
Interesting enough, this guy had UFO sightings, and he believed his animal was mutilated by extraterrestrials.
Yeah, what's interesting about that was this was the second time that he's been hit.
Mm-hmm.
He was hit previously back in the late 80s. So we can refer to him as somewhat experienced in having this event happen to, a person before. And even back then, he's mentioned that he saw unusual life before the animal, his animal was mutilated. Now, out of the five cases, two of the ranchers actually saw unusual life, Duran being one, and then Manuel Sanchez being
mm-hmm.
the other.
What I found interesting with Mike Duran's case is this animal was found, and this one wasn't totally obliterated like some of the others, but this animal was found at the bottom of a large ridge. And it was a little difficult for us to get down there. So, I mean, it didn't look like predators because there weren't pieces and parts and blood around. And if it were done by humans, how did they kill the animal? If they did it somewhere else, because there wasn't a mess there, how the heck would they have gotten the animal down there?
You know, what I really like about this particular case, and I really have favorite things about all five of the cases, what I really liked about this one was the animal, half of the animal was laying partially, you know, in the stream, and the other half, you know, the legs, the hooves, you know, they were right on the bank of the stream in the mud. Now, if an animal was going to die, it would have struggled a little bit, especially if it was predators, you know, that were taking it down. There would be marks in the mud. There would be score marks from the animal trying to move its legs to trying to get back up. And when we got the, you know, chance to see that, it looked as if the animal was just placed there. Or if it fell down, it just, you know, it fell down like it was frozen solid without moving its legs at all.
Right.
So, you know, looking at the evidence there, you can clearly see that there was no struggle at all because we would have seen it in the mud, and the mud was dried in certain areas around, you know, the front and hind legs. So that was what I liked really good about that particular case is the lack of and the perfect environment to prove that there was no struggle.
Right. And this was a case where what the udder was taken, I remember, the anal area was cored out. Kind of like the other historical cases. And it was also in view. I mean, it was probably a ways, a few hundred feet, but in view of a house.
Yeah. It was pretty close to a small highway, not a big one. What's interesting also about this animal is it was 28 years old. And it was one of his favorite animals because it was 28, and he took care of it a little bit differently, you know, fed it a little bit extra and extra vitamins. So being a favorite animal, he knew that there was, you know, if it was sick, or he would know if there was problems with it just because, you know, he considered it a pet somewhat. Mm-hmm. And when he found it missing, he went looking for it.
And with this case, this is where you first started to work with authorities because I remember, I think you saw this on the news and the police had said they were baffled and I believe you contacted the police at that point and they got you in touch with Duran. Is that how it worked?
Yeah, I actually have it here. I think it was, I called, when I first saw it on the news, I contacted the local KOAA channel, I forget what it was, it doesn't matter. And I contacted them, and they got me in touch with the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department, and I talked to a deputy, Elliot, there. And I asked him, could you do me a favor? Could you contact the rancher and give the rancher, you know, my name? And the rancher, you know, did that. He did go through with it, which I was pretty excited he did. So that's, you know, I basically tracked the first one down after it came out of the news. And so, unfortunately, you know, we were there a good week or so after it actually happened. You would love to be at an investigation within 36 hours. But this was still a very good case, and samples were taken, even though the samples were somewhat contaminated due to, you know, longevity of the animal being, you know, dead and then being on the stream. So, you know, Colorado State University was still able to look at the sample to determine whether or not the cuts were postmortem or
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, but I did want to talk about how were the authorities, what was their disposition, how were they treating you and what you do, and, you know, what did they tell you about the case?
Well, no, it's interesting. It really depends on the case.
Mm-hmm.
With the Duran case, they were very helpful, and I got the information really quick, where I was able to set up an investigation that Saturday. A couple of other cases, after talking to the ranchers, it seemed as though that the local county sheriff's department were either interested or not even interested.
You know,
I guess it pretty much all depends upon the deputy who goes out there and looks at it. If he has somewhat of an open mind, then you're bound to get a little more information out of him. If he has a closed mind and just goes there already with the assumption that it's a predator and scavengers that did the damage, you're not really going to get too much out. But, you know, the deputies, like me, you know, we're human. We have all, you know, our own different, we're all brought up differently. So, you know, when we look at these things, we're going to look at them a little differently, and you would hope you would, you know, be talking to someone with law enforcement that has a very open mind.
Now, how are you so sure that these other deputies are human? Just kidding. Actually, though, they did admit, though, that they were baffled. They it sounds like at least they admitted to the media that they weren't sure who or what had done this.
Well, you know, at first the Duran case was pretty good, and they did admit that. And then we had the Miller and Guerin after that, and it kind of they were kind of getting suspicious, like, oh, well, now we have a predator because it's happened a couple of times. And then it was kind of slow until you're looking at November, December, when we had two more. And the Manuel Sanchez one that you guys had on your website, the local sheriff's department was really baffled by that. In the Denver Post, there was an article out of the Denver Post where the reporter went down there and talked with him.
That was a great article. Now, we've got to go to break, but I want to talk more about how the authorities continued to be involved with these cases and baffled by these cases, and then we'll get into how the university got involved with these cattle mutilations. We're talking to Jeff Zukowski, paranormal investigator. We'll be back in a minute.
Welcome back to Open Minds Radio. Here now, official spokesperson for the Mutual UFO Network, your host of Open Minds Radio, Alejandro Rojas.
We're back with Open Minds, and we're talking about cattle mutilations here. Very strange stuff, and we're talking about the authorities, these big, tough deputy police officers out there in Colorado shaking in their boots because they don't know what is mutilating these animals in their county. Remember, you can call in. Call in right now. Everybody, call in and ask your question about cattle mutilations. The number is 602-277-5369 or toll-free 1-866-536-1100. Don't be afraid. Chuck's a really nice guy. And that's probably why you got to work with so many authorities, huh, Chuck? In fact, wasn't it the authorities who plugged you in or tuned you in to the cases after the Duran mutilation?
Yeah, actually, one of the brand inspectors tied me in on a couple of cases, and then one of the representatives from the Castillo Sheriff's Department I was able to talk to that tied me into one. Actually, but after the fact, I think after after Duran, the more and more this information gets out, like on your radio show, in the news, in the media, the more that people know who to contact. Because basically with the very last case that I call the Aaron mutilation, which is not the real rancher's name, he just didn't want to have to deal with the media. What happened was the case, it occurred, the sheriff's department came out, this particular representative of the sheriff's department didn't seem that interested. And so basically, the rancher himself started looking around for help.
Gotcha.
And that also happened with the Manuel Sanchez case also.
Yeah. We do have a caller on the line. So let's take this question from our caller real quick. On line one, we've got Ted. Are you there, Ted?
Yeah, I sure am.
Ted from Ahwatukee. Yes, sir.
I was wondering, how much government involvement has there been in some of these cases? And I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, great. Thanks for the question.
How much has the government been involved in it?
Yeah.
That was the question?
Right.
That's a good question. That's something that we always ask ourselves, too. I do know that out here in Colorado, back in the 80s when they had a string of these cattle mutilations going on before, that all the law enforcement all through Colorado sent a representative down to the San Luis Valley on the weekend for a quick cattle mutilation lecture.
Wow.
And it was pretty serious about that back then. That's about as close as I can say that the government's been involved. Now, if you're thinking further, up the ladder, that's a real good question. We have seen, or witnesses have seen, military-type individuals, military-type vehicles in an area where cattle mutilations have occurred. that's not the case for, you know, the five that I did last year. But I personally believe that they know what's going on, and at least I would hope that they know what's going on.
It's interesting that they wouldn't get very involved with this, and I know. And then the question is, are they the ones doing it? And I know some of the famous mutilations that happen right near the San Luis Valley on the border of New Mexico and Colorado at the Baca Ranch. There's a sheriff there who's looked into it, and he believes that these are being done by the military. But who knows, huh? Why would they do that?
And if it is being done by the military, then it's in conjunction to militaries, or they have their hands in it all over the world. I got an email just, I guess it was the end of last week, about mutilations in England. They've had tons of them. I've got emails from Canada, Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, Chile. You know, so these aren't just happening in the United States. And, matter of fact, last week I got pictures of a mutilation case in Kansas.
Wow.
It's just as recent as 2 weeks ago.
Are these situations where certain organs were removed, or like you had found occasionally where, you know, everything's gone?
The one in Kansas, within a couple of weeks ago, it was pretty much everything.
Wow.
But it was a calf. So it almost seems like we're starting to see a pattern here now. With the larger animals, they're going in and they're doing surgical cuts. With the smaller animals, they're just taking everything in the middle. What was interesting, out of the two calves, the Miller calf had its ears removed. Look at the pictures on my website, it's absolutely ridiculous. Their ears are actually cut off.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, unless we have a scavenger with a knife in his hand, you know, that knows
yeah.
how to use it, and opposable appendages to be able to hold it.
Yeah.
You know.
Got a couple of quick questions here, too. Sorry, I want to work.
Okay.
Only got a few minutes left, so... This person's asking if you know if mutilations are in the increase since the 70s.
You know, I think what's happening is, and that's a very good question, I think we're being more, it's being more talked about, and we're more aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're hearing more about it.
Right.
That's why we get a lot of UFO sightings out here in Colorado, because it's so clear and there's not a lot of light pollution. And so people have a tendency of seeing more, and I think that's what the case is with mutilations.
Right. And then before, you know, I want to get into this before we're done, which is you getting the University of Colorado or Colorado State University involved, which is really cool because they're a great vet school. And how did they react when you asked them to participate in investigating these?
It was really interesting. When I first went down there with some samples of the Duran and Miller and the Darren case, they were confused. Originally, there was a doctor there that had done lab analysis on back in the 80s, but he is, you know, long retired. So they had a new group of people in there. And I had to sit down, and basically I taught a good hour and a half lecture. I actually did with the doctor there and then, the interns that she was teaching. And we did a lecture on it so we could get them up to speed on what's going on. And then ever since that one, every mutilation case I've had, I contacted CSU and talked to my representative there and asked them their advice on what samples to take, if I need to take samples, because basically you can take samples all you want, but unless the lab has got the facilities to test for that particular sample and what you want, it's kind of useless.
Right. That's one thing I've learned in this investigating. If you've got someone willing, and it's better to look for someone willing and capable, like, of course, a university vet or whoever, to look at these samples, then you ask them prior to getting the samples, what's the best way to collect them and where do I collect them, because that way you have the best samples available. And what they found in this case, if I'm not correct, was interesting, that in the Duran case that they couldn't prove it wasn't predators, but they did find that the incisions were made after the animal's death, so that these incisions weren't the cause of death, which still is interesting.
That is pretty interesting. You know, I reread that report, you know, just recently due to another show I was on. And I actually read it, and I read into it again, where I saw them contradicting themselves, a little bit of confusion there, you know, if it's pre or post-mortem. And because there was no hemorrhaging, you know, no ev- it's hemorrhaging. It should have, if the animal was bleeding out when, you know, when it cut, there would have been signs of hemorrhaging. And in other cases, they're going, well, we don't, there was no signs of, well, there was, but we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to hope that the decisions were made after the animal was dead, just, you know, just because I'd hate to see an animal go through all that agony of what happened to
right.
while it was alive.
Well, we've got another caller. I think that's all we'll have time is to take this caller's call real quick, and then we'll wrap up. But we got Chuck on line one, another Chuck, and this one's from Mesa. Chuck, go ahead.
How are you guys doing today?
Great. Thanks Good. For calling.
I had a question now. You say that the animals were dead before the incisions were made. Were there any toxicology reports done to see if these animals might have been poisoned
in any
way?
That's another great question.
And that was a great question. I'll answer that real quick. What happened was is originally how you test for toxicology, you would take the internal organs. And we found out about that type of lab stuff after the fact. So currently, what I'm working with Colorado State University is we get a prime case and we're there within 36 hours because a lot of that stuff will dissipate over a short period of time and you'll lose the evidence. So they've agreed that either they're going to send a representative down with me and we'll do necropsy right on site, or we're going to take the animal in a flatbed truck and haul this animal back to Fort Collins where CSU is.
Right. So that was a great question.
You have to take the organs.
Yeah.
That's a good question. You have to take the organs.
Yeah. And that's the goal. That's what we're looking to do is get that done so we can tell if there was any poisoning being done, but we got to get the animal quicker. But we are out of time, Mr. Zukowski. If you want to hear
thank you guys.
more
thank
from
you,
Chuck.
Chuck.
Yeah. Thanks, Chuck. Which Chuck? Thank both of our Chucks. They were both great. But you can see Chuck at the UFO Congress, and you can also meet Open Minds there. That's at ufocongress.com, which is a conference coming up in just a couple weeks. It goes like the week from the 21st to the 28th. So come check us out there. Check us out next week. We're going to have David Cerita. He's in the technology industry, and he got involved with UFO research when he saw some NASA footage that apparently has UFOs in it. He's going to talk to us about that. And also his relationship with Dan Aykroyd. He filmed a great documentary with Dan Aykroyd, who talks for 2 hours on Aykroyd's UFO research. He's really into this. Thanks for listening to Open Minds Radio. All of this can be found at openminds.tv. You can also get more information on advertising at Open Minds Radio. We're bringing the UFO subject into the light of day, and we're happy that you were here listening.
Thank you.